Greetings all, and welcome back to your one-stop shop for mystery, magic, and miracles. You'll realize as you begin this episode that the music is different for this intro, and it's because I want to mix things up a little bit. So stay on your toes, because in the following weeks, there will be some slight changes. I'm just trying to keep it interesting for both you and me. But you know what keeps this podcast interesting? Are the fabulous guests I find, and this weekend is no exception. This week, you're meeting Tim Thomas, and Tim does a lot of work to support veterans in this world. Tim is a former Special Forces operator, and honestly, he's a whole lot more than that. When we started our conversation, he was telling me that he'd already run that morning, he'd already done his cold water plunge for the morning. I mean, the list of things that Tim had already done kind of just blew my mind. And you'll hear a little bit of that conversation in the Easter egg at the end of this episode, because there is an Easter egg. You know how much I love those. And so after the credits, if you want to listen, that part of our conversation was really fun too. Now back to Tim. Together with his team, he's raised over $1 million for charities that create real, measurable change. And he supports two that he's particularly proud of: the Gallipoli Medical Research Foundation, which pioneers breakthroughs in health research for veterans, and the Queensland Brain Institute, which is known globally for its work in neuroscience and mental health. Tim and I got along really well, and his miracle experience that he shares, you know, just left my jaw hanging, because I can't even imagine being in the same situation that Tim describes. And I'm going to give you a little hint. It has to do with a shark. But true to his nature, Tim is unflappable. He's kind of unstoppable, and he's also really, really funny. I don't know how I keep meeting these really humorous, incredibly self-effacing human beings, but there appear to be a lot out there. So now, let me introduce you to Tim and have him tell you all about Tim, but also about that shark.
I'm like, okay, well, I'm in this moment. The shark's biting on me. I'm drowning. What can you tell me with the information I've got about sharks? And so I literally go, what do I have about sharks? So all the information, I pulled everything up about sharks in my mind, and it didn't help, because all the stuff I had around sharks was just me being scared of sharks. Because I grew up on the west coast of South Australia, where all the big great whites were. So I grew up like screaming with nightmares of sharks. I would say my name's Tim Thomas, and I follow my joy. I treat my energy like it's money. How you invest it is how you get it back, and I have a joy portfolio. Just like you invest money into shares that give you a really good return, I invest energy into things that bring me joy. And that they're not always comfortable. You know, did I want to go for a run this morning? Absolutely not. My chronic back pain, which I have to say that I have, and I might have to switch chairs during this interview because of it. But you know, this is where you know, knowing that my day has chronic pain in it, I have to go out and access more energy so I can deal with it from a position of strength.
Yeah.
And in many ways, I don't have a choice. It's quite a blessing to have a chronic injury, because I have to go out and get an abundance of energy so I can deal with it. Otherwise, if I'm just adequate, this thing's taken from me, you know? So, yes, I would say a joy portfolio. Or the other thing I would say, I am PG rated, you know, powerful and generous.
That's amazing. Oh my gosh. Okay. First, I have to tell you that no one else
on this show, and I've done, I think at this point, over 250 or so.
Oh, wow.
No one else has ever had a joint portfolio. I'm just going to say that. And then no one else has been PG rated. I mean, I'm not saying, you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. So
no, I totally get it.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
PG, yeah, you know, powerful and generous and gentle. Because I notice if I'm not being generous and gentle with my interactions, I'm not powerful. So if I'm in traffic and I'm getting really cranky, I'm not powerful because I'm not being gentle and generous.
Yeah.
You know, so that's sort of my little overlap with all my interactions, just to keep my bird's eye view on things. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm really intrigued because you were in Special Forces.
Yep.
My question is, when you were a kid, you know, did you think that's what I want to do? Like, how did that happen?
It's not something I pictured myself doing, but I just spent about 7 years sort of full time in the burgeoning mixed martial arts fight scene. So this was before anyone was making money from it, but I was invested full time because I was getting so much joy from it, right? And then, you know, I was 29, 30, wanting to start a family. And in Australia, they started this very unique scheme. First time in Australia's military history, they started this DRSF scheme, Direct Recruiting into Special Forces. So they took appropriately screened civilian personnel, and apparently between 5 and 10,000 people applied for this, but they had to go through obviously physical testing, mental testing, aptitude testing, psychological testing, blah, 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 test. And of that, 70 people were initially selected. I was part of that 70, and I was the oldest at 30. And everyone was saying, you're too old. But, you know, fun fact about me is I'm dyslexic. I see things in patterns. And what I saw that was obvious is, like, this is the first time I've aged. I've never actually aged before. This is my first go at it. So I've never been 30 before. And I asked everybody to draw this question to them. How many times before have you been this age? And I had all these people saying, you can't do this at this age. You can't do this at this age. And I'm like, well, shouldn't it be me that decides what I can and can't do at a particular age? You know, yeah. And I really found that people that were saying that, they were saying, I can't do that or I couldn't do that. And they may have tried to do something you have done, but they've gotten hurt and disappointed because they couldn't get it. And often I found people almost try to sabotage you sometimes because in some crazy way they're trying to protect you from the pain they experienced when they tried, didn't get the outcome they wanted, got hurt, and they say, well, I don't want you to be hurt too, so you'll never do it. You'll never do it. You know, and I'm like, thank you, but this is where you stop and I start. Yeah, so I got the nickname Old Man Tomo. I didn't quite like it. but growing up in the 70s, it gave me a certain, let's just say, tactile resilience, because getting beaten up at school was just a Tuesday. You wouldn't even tell your mum and dad, you know. So I had a certain inbuilt, you know, I could just take a hit. And a lot of the younger guys, they were like, no, this is not right. I can't, you know. So there was an advantage to having that sort of age in the space as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I will have to say the 70s were wild and woolly. We'll never see a time like that again. We were
free range chickens.
It's so true.
I'd say we'd taste better.
Yes. I mean, honestly, it is really just seeing how everything is so curated these days for kids, and, you know, parents are on top of their kids all the time. People, you know, I've had my nieces and nephews ask me, is it true that, like, you guys, like, just went out on a Saturday and, like, were gone all day and nobody cared? Or, I mean, maybe they cared, but they weren't. There were no cell phones. They couldn't call you, but they didn't worry. The stress wasn't there. And I'm like, yes. I mean, yes. We just had the run of the neighborhood and it was amazing.
Well, I think what in the background, the higher thinking of that was, yes, there might be a broken leg, a scuffed knee or whatever it is. But if you didn't get that rough and tumble, you know, so let's say, because I know in a lot of Australian schools, they don't let the kids run at lunch and recess. I can't believe that, right? And because it saves their knees and, you know, falling over and all that. So they've made it wrong to fall over and hurt yourself. And, you know, I'm saying if for every knee you save getting scraped, you're probably getting 50 people getting type 2 diabetes as they get older.
Yeah.
You know, so they're not seeing, they're seeing, oh, let's keep them safe, but they're not seeing that there's, that comes at a cost of later in life. You're gonna lose a lot of lives to all these preventable diseases because you're not getting active. And so we haven't quite gone full circle in that yet.
Yeah, I mean, I loved recess because we had this massive, massive blacktop, and there was this huge like jungle gym plaything, which they had to take down eventually because children fell and got hurt or whatever, and it was bad and got really injured. But also, that was another thing about the 70s and 80s, you know, it was, people are like, oh, we're going to build this 2-story slide. And there were no railings, there was no precautions, and kids did get hurt because kids are little crazy creatures. And eventually all of those contraptions had to get taken down and dismantled. But yeah, it was like amazing to like have that, I don't know, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. You just go outside, you know, you play with a jump rope, you play hopscotch, you run around and play tag. It was the best, frankly, the best.
You connect with your physical body, you connect with others.
And I'm sure the teachers were like, thank God. Thank God they're getting some of their the wiggles out, I guess they would say. Like, those kids, we need recess. It's desperate. Well, I'm so curious, you know, growing up, you talk about, you know, getting beaten up was a Tuesday. That seems pretty stressful. I mean, did you start to dread going to school?
No. Look, I mean, sometimes I won, sometimes I lost. Most of my friends growing up were Aboriginal. Okay. So Indigenous Australians or First Nations. And if they liked you, they fought with you.
Okay.
If they didn't like you, they'd pick something up and hit you with it. And that made sense to me, right? Because okay, that made sense. So it was normal. It wasn't like wasn't anything personal. I never felt stressed, although the thing that did stress me out was growing up dyslexic, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, the technical term for that was you're stupid, you know, and I was probably ADHD, so I was the stupid kid that couldn't sit still. And you tell a kid that enough and he starts believing it. So in the background, I was saying, you know, okay, the sky's blue, my name's Tim and I'm stupid. And so because I'm like, I just don't get this, I might as well have as much fun as I can. So I was a kid that was always in trouble. And it really got bad in high school because if you didn't measure up in academically, it was like all of you was wrong. It was like, high school for me was like you get 1,000 kids, you throw 1,000 blankets over them, you cut out 1,000 holes, and if you look in those holes and they don't measure up in those holes, then they're not just, you know, not adequate, they're substandard, they're not good enough. And that really sort of, looking back on it, dropped my sense of self-worth. So because I couldn't measure up in these specific areas, I thought I didn't measure up in every single area of my life. And I'm sure, I mean, I've got gifts to give, but if my sense of self-worth is low, then those, you know, seeds of greatness and all those gifts just lay dormant in the soil. So it made me ask the question, because I started doing these IQ tests in my mid-20s and I'm like, oh, crap, I'm actually doing pretty good. I had a pretty reasonable IQ. Surprised the hell out of this guy. And I'm like, maybe I'm not as stupid as everyone says I am. And then I started realizing, yeah, I've got all these gifts. And then I asked the question, how many other people are out there in society that have all these seeds of greatness and these seeds of contribution just laying dormant because they've got this sense, this low sense of self-worth? And it really gave me a heart to see the potential in others, because you've got to see it before it grows. Because when it's grown and you're living this fruitful life and you're killing it, everyone's like, yeah, you're the best, right? But it's in that stage where no one can see it. you know, you need to see it yourself, but it's also very handy if someone else can see it as well. You know, that faith in that person, that knowing that good things are coming, it can really make all the difference. So it gives me a lot of joy creating spaces where those dormant seeds of greatness, those seeds of uniqueness grow. That's what makes me excited to get out of bed, to see that. Well, firstly, to make myself flourish, and then out of my abundance. So like I mentioned it earlier about like a joy portfolio.
Yeah.
My vision is I want to live like an energetic millionaire, and I want others to do the same. Because I know what it's like to be that person with only 50 cents worth of energy, and someone takes 25 cents, and we all get taken from. That's just, you wake up, things are going to happen that takes from you, right? But if it's a big difference if you've only got 50 cents and someone takes 25 cents, and then if you're at $1 million and someone takes 25 cents. Because I know when I was at 50 cents and someone took 25, I'd want to chase that. You know, you're wrong to do that. I'm right to go after you. And I'd spend years chasing 25 cents and I forget the fact that I can make $1 million the very next day.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. How beautiful that, you know, you had this inner knowing, you had these experiences that kind of led you to this work that you're doing. And it's work not only for yourself, but really it's work to lift other people up. And that work can be exhausting. It can be debilitating. So it's really important to find that well of energy or grace or whatever that looks like to replenish yourself. I am actually curious here. Curiosity is my favorite superpower. So, you know, a lot of people would say or look at you and say, oh, special forces. How can someone who's PG be in special forces? I think people are more than the sum of their parts. You know, you can have all these different pieces to yourself, but I think people would think special forces, think what special forces does, and think that what you do now or how you are in the world is the antithesis of that. What do you think?
Well, good question, because that's where it all came from. When I was in complete fatigue, I had to find the things that actually worked that were greater than my own strength.
Okay.
So outside the war in Afghanistan, you never got anything you'd call sleep. And we were trained to deal with fatigue. That was what we did. But when you're in a war zone, it goes to a whole new level. You know, you're losing mates. You are having bits blown off others. And I had this sense that I was going to die. And I remember, and special forces, we're all kind of alpha dudes, and we often argue with each other. When there's not an enemy to fight, we fight each other, right? I feel like it's like an off-leash dog park that, and all the dogs are fighting. It's like we need to attack something, otherwise we attack each other, right? and I'd argued with my corporal. He told me to F off and just do like stare out into the bush, into the desert. And I'm there, I got 2 cents worth of energy. I feel like I'm going to die. And I thought, if I've only got 2 cents worth of energy, I better invest that wisely. And like I said, I never got anything that you'd call sleep, like for 8 hours. But one thing they teach you in the army is they get you to take a deep breath in and let it out slowly. To take a sight picture, to get your crosshairs on the target, deep breath in. So they use breath work as part of their own modality. And so going to sleep, I would focus on my non-dominant thumb and breathe in like I was breathing into my thumb and breathe out all the tension. And then I'd breathe in light. And then I'd breathe out tension and light into my pointer, my index. And I'd start pulling that through my whole body. And then for whatever reason, I wasn't trained in this, but for whatever reason, I'd go to bed with 2 cents worth of energy and I'd wake up with 8. And so I thought, I'm just going to keep investing that. I'm just going to keep investing that capital. And then I got to a point where I'm like, I need to understand that I'm in a team. And if my team's having a bad day, I'm having a bad day. So I need to be strong enough to pour into them. And as much as it's a sign of power to be generous to others, I think it can be done wrong. I think some of the nastiest people start off as generous because they give, and then when there's nothing less, no, here's a boundary. Everybody get lost, politely. So I then said, well, I can't just be adequate here. I need to be abundant. I can't be at 100%. If I'm at 100% and I give 10% away to somebody, I say, well, you better do something with that because I'm down to 90%. But if I generate 500%, I can give away 20% a day. People can love it, hate it, tell me to get lost. It doesn't matter. I'm in touch with something so much greater than what can be taken from me. Mm. And for me, that's about the most powerful statement I can imagine. I'm in touch with something so much more powerful than what can be taken, because we all get taken from, you know, there are energy vampires everywhere.
Yes.
So knowing that, you know, you can more than just put back in what can be taken from you allows you to go forward fearlessly. So this is why I'm saying you need to create an energy portfolio that always puts you into that $1 million energy state, because as sure as there's light of day, there are going to be people out there that take instances, that take things, that expect more from you than what you already have. And the problem people make is they say, well, I'm going to try and stop all those people trying to take from me. And you can't stop people trying. That's outside of your skin. But what you can do is just keep continually committing to the type of person you want to be. You know, I want to be powerful and generous. And that starts here. And it doesn't stop here, but that the powerful connections you've got inside yourself puts you into a better chance of creating powerful connections outside of ourselves. And what I found is with us humans is we are built for connection. We're most powerful when we are connected to the other person. And this is what I found in Special Forces. Our power was how connected we are to the other person. And so what I did was I said, well, how do I multiply this out? Because I was a private. I was paid to do what everyone else did. And I had a supply of coffee. So I'd make coffee for people. And you think that was easy? Well, the problem with Special Forces is it's a very special dynamic. And if you do an, I knew that if I did an act of service, if I brought a coffee to another alpha male, it was, an undeserved act of service, they would call me the brew bitch. And I'm like, I've worked too hard to be called the brew bitch. Someone's getting knocked out if that happens, right? But I had to see the self-benefit. In my mind, things aren't hard if you see the self-benefit. Okay, literally, nothing is hard if you can see enough self-benefit. So the self-benefit I saw was, who did I want around me when good times turn bad? Do I want weak, fatigued, arguing, you know, soldiers? Or do I want connected, strong, powerful? And I thought, look, even if it's just for me, I have to do this. And then I realized that I called it the ego bridge. If you dropped your ego, you didn't really care about what other people thought. It became a bridge to anywhere you wanted to get to. So that was like a really powerful thing. And in that space, I saw the power of, I'd gotten servanthood mixed up with servitude.
Wow. Okay. I love that. And so true. And I totally get not wanting to be the brew bitch. I was a barista for a long time. So I've been there, done that, a little bit over it at this point in my life. Know way too much about coffee, probably more than I want to know. But I also like that I have that knowledge. Thank you for all that. I appreciate all that. That was such a great, explanation of kind of your journey and how it evolved and, the outside influences that kind of sculpted it and what have you. I would love to ask, you know,
sure, but before we jump to that next one, there's something I like to sort of say, something that sort of ties it all together. So what I discovered in the Special Forces was, you know, is my strength for service or status?
I love that. That's such a great question, because I feel like we can use it every day, everywhere we are, in every interaction we have. I think that's such a good question. Thank you. It's like we should all have little business cards in our back pockets and we're like, what's that question again? And then you can pull it out and say, aha, that's it. I love that. Thank you. Well, so let me ask you this. Did you grow up in a religious household? What did that look like in your life or in your childhood, in your house? And how did it evolve over time for you?
Sure. Well, my father ended up being an overseas missionary. So grew up very conservative Christian, and dad worked in the Lutheran Church in remote Aboriginal areas in Australia. And you know, these are people, you know, rather low in the socioeconomic sort of spectrum of things. We'd, you know, go out to the town camps, and I quite enjoyed it because they were very accepting, especially of children. And I figured out pretty quickly that they couldn't say no to a child under five. So I would find the oldest Aboriginal man. I'd say, "What do you make?" And then he goes, "Oh, I make boomerangs. Make me a boomerang." And he'd take me out into the bush. He'd show me the bend in the tree, would cut it, and I'd sit next to him as he trimmed it down. I'd carve it up and then give it. And I've got some of those artifacts, you know, with me now. But to answer your question around, you know, the it was very conservative Christian and kind of word for word. So the interpretation of turn the other cheek was literal. And can you imagine how long it took the other kids at school to realize they could punch the big guy in the face and he wouldn't do anything? You know, it was on. You could say that's, you know, terrible, or you could say I learned early what it is to suffer for your beliefs. Now, whatever those beliefs are, there's one thing to have those beliefs when they're working well for you. It's another thing to have a set of beliefs when it's not popular, when it's not working out for you, when you're suffering for it. Like that. That's kind of where it's at, man. You know, otherwise you're kind of getting blown around the place. Who likes red T-shirts? I'll wear red T-shirts. Who's wearing blue T-shirts? I'll wear blue T-shirts, you know. I'm getting punched in the face today. I've got to change what I'm doing.
Wow. Well, I am actually intrigued by this. Now, I'm going to assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, that, you know, when your father wasn't out, you know, in these Aboriginal towns, places, that you lived in a predominantly white kind of town. Is that true?
Oh no, it was mixed. It was definitely a mixed town. And in the 70s and 80s, you could drink anywhere you wanted. So there was a lot of public drinking, a lot of violence. It's the violence to the point where it was almost treated like a cartoon, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's an intense place for a kid to grow up. I mean,
but the funny thing is, it was like they one thing I always knew was the Indigenous always looked after children. Like there would be shit going down, broken glass, getting stabbed, but they'd always look after the kids. And I mean, this is a true story, even though it's a bit graphic. They loved Australian rules football. And there was you know, predominantly Aboriginal team, predominantly white team, and I'm in the toilets, and there was a lot of drinking going on, and I'm sitting in the toilets, and this door just gets kicked open, and there's an Aboriginal man in front of me with his pants down, you know, and I'm like a 5-year-old kid, but even though I was shocked because the door was kicked open, I knew instinctively he wouldn't do anything to me because they look after kids. You know, and he stumbled in and took a piss right next to me, but it was just one of those things. Then he went out and there was no harm done.
Oh my gosh. Your childhood seems a little wild and woolly. Like we were talking about the 70s earlier on being a little wild and woolly, but like it sounds next level for you.
Yeah. This was like, if you could see the US equivalent, like really sort of down south type stuff.
Okay, I love that
That's not even the half of it. Oh man, I could tell you some funny stories, but what I'm trying to say is there was, you know, some things that were considered sort of weird, but because they were happening every day and you know, it wasn't hurting me, it was just sort of normal, you know. And if you got roughed up, you know, and I'd want to fight other guys too, and sometimes I'd win. So it wasn't, it was just sort of, you'd fight, but you wouldn't exactly like hunt each other down afterwards and, you know, come back with a mob. It was just something you kind of did. It was just like a very energetic interaction.
I love that. You should, that should be in quotes. It was a very energetic interaction. I feel like that could be used as a euphemism for so many things. Thank you. for that. Specifically, I'm also thinking about the ice bath earlier and how the water could say that, and you could say that about the water. It was a very energetic interaction, because afterwards, I'm sure you're glowing. And I totally know the science behind the ice bath and how amazing it is supposed to be for our physiologies and our physical cells and all of that. So I'm kind of jealous that you've just got, you're like, oh, there's the ice bath, and I can just like hop on in. But I need to make friends with someone who has an ice bath or a cold dipping pool or something.
Like I mentioned earlier, you don't need that to get 70% of the benefits. And I hope you kept right. that in the recording. I'm assuming that the preamble that we had is in the recording.
Yes. Yeah.
If you can get a bowl, you can put a bowl, fill it 1/3 full of water, put it in your freezer, or just have a bunch of ice and just putting your face in there. There's a number of different benefits. Physiologically, it sets up this cascade of reactions. So when I've developed my, programs for veteran recovery, triggering that mammalian dive reflex, the guys were like, for the first time in forever, all the noise stopped in my head, all the voices stopped in my head. Because what happens when this thing's triggered, your whole body reacts. It's like a superhuman power that no one knows they have. Your external extremities constrict, put blood to your core, and your heart rate goes dun 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 douche, like it almost halves, and it literally lobotomizes your brain. It shuts off all the crap you don't need in your head, because deep down we know we don't need stress to survive. Like, isn't that a thing? We don't need stress to survive, people. You just gotta shove someone's head in a bucket of water. You don't need stress to survive. You know, but this is what these veterans are saying, triggering this mammalian dive reflex. They just found this place of calm. Now, they could do yoga for 10 or 15 years and probably get the same result, or you could just take a few deep breaths, put your face in cold water. It's somewhat intense, but this is what this thing triggers. And so that's the very first thing I do to start the day, is I just go out there, bowl of water, put my face in it, and blow a few, just blow those bubbles. And if you've ever had an oximeter or a heart rate monitor, yeah, it really drops it off. Mentally and physiologically, one of the best things you can do. It's free. It adds value to every interaction. I've often shown it to somebody and they introduce their whole family to it, their children, everybody. It is quite intense, but there is something in there that goes deeper than words, deeper than words.
I love that. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. I might need to work up to it, but I might start including it. Just to let you know. No promises.
Well, I would love by the end of this, to share. My humble brag is I can show you how to completely relax your body in three breaths. Three breaths.
Okay. Yeah, we will do that.
Three proper breaths.
All right. Well, I would love to ask you the main question of the podcast, which is, I would so appreciate you sharing a story or stories, it can be more than one, of an experience that you've had in your life, or maybe even something that you've witnessed that you thought was magical, miraculous, mysterious. I have had every story you can think of, from ghosts to having an NDE to best friendship sharing, saving someone's life. So really, it's whatever you feel comfortable enough sharing. I'd love to hear whatever it is.
I guess the top shelf experience, I mean, growing up, I thought the house was haunted. There might have been something going on there. But I had this, I've been blessed enough to have a few NDEs. And one of them...
I love, first of all, that you say you've had a few NDEs, because usually a person has one and it changes their entire life.
It could have been growing up in the 70s. It's just another day. I have discovered that we have this wondrous body, and there's something inside of it that is, it's in our physical bodies, yet it's not physical. Non-physical, and it can be stirred by, you know, music, movement, dance, breath, combat, NDEs, and or having a dream for your life that, you know, defies possibility. There's this energetic signature that's unique to each person, and when we have an experience that we're really connected with, then that sort of energetic signature gets enhanced so much more than we could expect. And the term I kind of use is energetic millionaire. And if you can use that as your plotting device, then you start to become a sovereign person, because it's like this golden compass is leading you where you need to go. So I had this one NDE. I'm a spear fisherman, and it was a classic one where, you know, life flashing before my eyes. And it was a shark attack. But the point was, afterwards, a guy asked me, do you think that was a spiritual experience, seeing all this stuff flashing before your eyes? And I said, no. And here's why. Because it was a cool experience, right? Like, literally all my things flashing in front of my eyes. And I think that's like a chemical that gets pushed into your brain and all your stuff gets pushed together. But I, in that moment, I'm like, okay, that's just a bunch of information. That's not serving me. And I literally treated it like a Google search engine. I'm like, okay, well, I'm in this moment. The shark's biting on me. I'm drowning. What can you tell me with the information I've got about sharks? And so I literally go, what do I have about sharks? So all the information, I pulled everything up about sharks in my mind, and it didn't help, because all the stuff I had around sharks was just me being scared of sharks. Because I grew up on the west coast of South Australia, where all the big great whites were. So I grew up like screaming with nightmares of sharks. And I'm like, well, that's no good. Okay, well, let's try this. Let's try predatory animals. So I put that into the search, and I came back with a friend of mine called Wes. Now, you've probably heard of this, the crocodile hunter, Steve Irwin?
Yeah.
Okay, so his right-hand man is called Wes, and him and I are jiu-jitsu buddies. And a few years back, he got bit in the ass by a crocodile, a big boy, and I go to visit him in hospital. And in the hospital, in my NDE, I'm in the hospital room with Wes, clear as day. And what he said to me gave me context and brought me into the moment. He said, and I asked him, so what was it like? He says, you know, Tim, it was funny. For years I was scared about, you know, crocs, and honestly wondering what it would be like. And here it was actually happening. It was sort of like, it was almost relaxing. And then I took that information and I went back into the moment like, yeah, wow, my whole life I've been worried about this one thing, and here it is actually happening. And it's actually kind of relaxing, you know, like it's finally happening. It's no longer this thing that's chasing you. It's actually got you, right? You know, and this thing wasn't letting go. I was stabbing this thing in the eye. And the only thing that saved me was I was wearing this thing on my leg called a shark shield, which is like an electrical device. And dumb me, I didn't have it turned on. But the on switch was inside where it was biting. Like, it was biting on my leg, and just in the corner of its mouth, it couldn't quite close, and the on switch is in the mouth. I'm like, you know, bugger it. I'm about to die here. I might as well lose my finger. So I stick it kind of in the corner of its mouth, and I'm feeling around inside its mouth for the on switch. And then I find it, and I flick it on, and then boom, the thing lets go. So you know, I get to the surface. It was probably the sweetest tasting air I've ever tried. Afterwards, someone said, was that a spiritual experience? And I'm like, no, because it was just everything I've seen from my own perspective. It was cool in the way that it was presented, but it was nothing new. And I said, if that was truly a spiritual experience, you wouldn't just be a chronological order of events. I'd see one event and how it affected, say, two other people, and then maybe four, and all that ripple effect, you know, a bit like a bee. It just wants to make honey, but do you think it actually knows that it's pollinating that plant, making fruit for the plant, making animals for the eat the fruit, making animals eat the animals eat the fruit? You know, like this whole chain of events outside of its one natural desire to move forward. And this is, to me, what faith is. Faith isn't knowing whether God exists or not, because he simply does or he doesn't. Faith to me is knowing that my average everyday life is creating these powerful and positive impacts either side of me. Now, I can't see them with the eyes that I have, but I believe we've all been given that compass where if we do the things that give you joy, you know, that make you feel good, that, you know, that light you up, like they're the things that are having these effects outside of you. And I do have the faith to think that when I get to the other side, God's going to go, hey, Tim, here's your life as you saw it. And he'll show what I've already seen. And he'll say, here's your life as you didn't see it. And he'll show all these, you know, ripple effects that I never even knew was there. They just felt good to do, and I felt led to do, and it didn't make sense at times. Like, why the hell am I doing this? But God knew that. And I also have a faith to know that, you know, he'll show the good and he'll show the bad. He'll cover the bad with grace and he'll, you know, work through. And so this is that sort of what faith to me is, knowing that as we move forward, there are these powerful things happening either side of us. And I guess that was the most powerful thing I got from that, that NDE.
Okay, yeah, I just want to just say a couple of things. One is, I think your childhood in the 70s, which you've already said is wild and woolly, totally set you up for getting attacked by a shark. Frankly, I just feel that way because you just seem to have handled it with such grace. Second of all, so spearfishing, I didn't understand. I've always thought spearfishing was you're standing in the shallows fishing. Not, were you like out in the ocean?
Yeah. We're off a reef.
Like on a surfboard, or are you on a boat?
No. You swim out. You got your fins on, so you swim out. Well, on this occasion, we were shore diving, so we swam maybe 400 or 500 meters out, found a reef, started swimming around there, and then this bull shark started to get friendly.
Okay, yeah. So, I just love that someone has invented this thing that you put on your leg for sharks. Like, who comes up with this? Some brilliant human being comes up with this. And what I really find powerful about your story is, first of all, your friend got attacked by a crocodile. And then second of all, you have this conversation with him, which then kind of potentially saves your life with the shark.
Yeah.
And also... relaxed. Like, I'm also kind of, because you said you were stabbing the shark with your, and it wasn't letting go.
Yeah, I don't believe it when people say, oh, I punched the shark and scared it off. I'm like, no, he just didn't want you, you know. And I might say it's particularly hard to stab a shark when you're getting flipped around the place and you have to get this thing. And, you know, and the funny thing about that, I'm a lot of martial arts, professional fight. I know what it is to take a hit, but never have I ever had the feeling of my whole body, you know, like when a big dog grabs a toy and shakes it, my whole body felt like that. Like, you know, I've never had my whole body just shaking like a toy. Yeah, that was something.
Oh my gosh. Your experiences are just unbelievable. And so, I mean, presumably, you know, the shark lets go. And did you swim then back to shore?
Oh, no, look, well, before this shark lets go, my mate Jimmy, he's a fellow commando, he's seeing me getting tossed around, and this is the lesson. This is another incredible lesson I learned. So, you know, I'm about to, and this is before I put my finger inside its mouth, I'm getting tangled up on all this line, and then Jimmy's coming down, and he's got this look in his eye. He says, I've got this and I've got you. And in that moment, I just trust the power of human trust in another human. And my whole body just relaxed. And I turned because I could see him wanting to take a shot in this shark, and the shark was kicking around. And I'm like, you know, he could hit me, but he could hit the shark. So I had to trust this guy. And I realized, like, when things get hard, we as humans tend to think we need more stuff to make us secure and make us relaxed. But no, we need more trust. And the trust that I had in this guy gave me complete peace in this really messed up situation. And so I turned, let him take the shot. He took the shot. But to be honest, and it was a good shot, I'll give him that, but I think it pissed the shark off a bit more. And then I had his spear through the whole thing, and I'm getting tangled up in even more stuff. Yeah. So it was after that I had to say, you know, I have to take matters in my own hands here and do something.
Oh my God.
But yeah, the feeling of trust I got, like literally I felt it rippling through my whole system, even though I'm like in a really crap situation, you know, possibly the last 30 seconds I'm alive, that trust in another human, I'm like, it's like I needed that to get through my own skin to realize how powerful trust is. Speaking to the fact that often, you know, some people, when they show trust in somebody, they get hurt and they don't want to experience that hurt again.
Yeah.
So I just try and be the person that can be trustworthy. And when I, especially if I worked with veterans, I noticed if they could have that trust there, it looked like a hovercraft, everything lifted up and they could pivot everything a lot easier if they felt safe and they could trust the person.
Everyone, don't forget that there is a little Easter egg at the end of this episode, so make sure not to miss it. Tim does some breath work with me. We have that conversation about the cold dipping and other things. And all in all, it's just a really sweet addition to this conversation that I've released today. I need to thank Tim for being such a gracious guest, but also for being a badass. I mean, he's telling this story of having several NDEs, and all I can think is, what? I mean, if you have one NDE, and that, my friend, stands for near-death experience, you kind of have your life forever altered. The fact that Tim has had multiple, I think, speaks to his bravery, his resolve, and basically his refusal to give up. I think it's incredible that he's in this world helping a population who often, after conflict, after the violence, after wars have ended, are taken for granted and kind of just left to live their own lives and muddle through whatever trauma they brought back from the wars. So I'm very grateful that Tim is in the world and that he's doing so much work to support them. Please remember, there will be a link in the episode show notes to Tim and his work and his website, so be sure not to miss that. Please click on through to find out a little bit more about what this incredible human is doing in the world. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Tim. Don't give up. I mean, I'm not telling you to go out and fight a shark or even fight a crocodile. I'm not telling you to go do something crazy that might threaten your life. But I am telling you that in the challenges in your life, in those things that make you feel uncomfortable, in those things that maybe make you scared, there is a possibility for you to stand up and be righteous and be brave and be there for other people who are maybe suffering. There's a way to be present with your convictions in a way that is both beautiful and brave. So in these coming years, we're gonna need people to be both beautiful and brave and stand up for what they believe in. You know, we've got each other's backs, and I firmly believe that. So be like Tim, have other people's backs, support other people who are suffering, be present for those who need you. And you know what? It's gonna make this world even more beautiful. It's gonna make this world even more magical. And we need more of that. We need more of that in our lives. I'll see you next week for the very next episode. And until then, be brave, dance like no one's watching, and stand tall in the courage of your convictions.
Well, our time is winding down, so I would love to talk to you about this breath work and these three.
I would love to.
Yes. I'd love to hear it. Yes, yes, yes.
You know what? I don't want to talk about it because there's so many people going, blah, 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 sleep's important. Okay. What I want to do, when I had PTSD, we had all these academics coming in saying, here's what we've learned about a 5-year study on PTSD. I'm like, please, I know. I live with this stuff, okay? Give me something I can take home. So I'm going to give you something right now. I'm going to give you an experience that if all you get from this podcast is this type of breathing, you are going to be set up so much more powerfully. All right?
Yeah, okay. Cool.
Looking forward to showing. Okay, so all you have to do is give yourself permission, give your breath permission to do what it's born to do. Do you give your breath permission to do what it's born to do?
Yes, I love this. Okay, yes.
Okay. Do you give your conscious mind permission to let your breath do what it's supposed to do?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, your unconscious mind. Do you give your unconscious mind permission to let your breath give to you what it's there to give you?
Yes.
Awesome. All right. So this is going to be super easy and effortless. I'm going to use all my breathwork superpowers to help you do this. We're going to start with simply breathing, being aware of breathing. Just breathe in and breathe out. If you did that, congratulations. You're on your first step to peace and power. Conscious breathing, being aware of your breath, because what cortisol or fight or flight does is get you so connected to outside of yourself that you disconnect to inside of yourself. And to me, that's where the mental health problems start happening. When you're so connected to outside of yourself, when I was in fight or flight, I was always looking for threats, couldn't drop my guard for a second. I didn't know I was breathing shallow. Okay. So I didn't even know I was breathing. So that first awareness of your breath, well done. So. Yay. What we're going to do now is we're going to build on that. I'm going to show you how to take a proper inhale. So just simply breathe in and then breathe in more, 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 more.
Okay.
Give that a try. So we're going to blow it out. Just blow it out and shake it out. Blow it out, shake it out. Start breathing in and then breathe in more, 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 more. And if it feels good, let it out with a sigh. Nice work. I love a good sigh. So that big teethy grin tells me you're on the right track, because let's call it our primary inhale and this little bit of extra air that you pulled in, that's your secondary inhale. Our secondary inhale is where we hold a lot of tension. So when we fully breathe into it and we get rid of tension, often we get this smile on our face. Now, the best thing I love about doing what I do, Kirsten, is showing people just how wonderful their body is. Your body can do a whole lot more than just carry your eyeballs around, okay? So we're gonna access this secondary inhale with part of your body you never even knew could do this. These fingers and thumb, that's a turbo button, okay? That's going to boost your secondary inhale. So what I'm going to invite you to do, we're going to blow it out, then we breathe in. When it gets to the secondary inhale, I want you to pinch those two fingers and thumbs together as hard as possible and notice the impact it has on that secondary inhale. Cool, okay. Cool?
Yeah, yeah.
So let's just blow it out, blow it out, blow it out. Feel those little turbo buttons, start breathing in. And when you get to the secondary, now hit those turbo buttons. In, in. And if it feels good, let it out with a sigh. Okay, well done. Now, did you notice those little turbo buttons and the effect it had on your secondary inhale?
Yes.
Two thumbs up. Yes. Who knew, right? Our bodies are incredible. It always amazes me how many professional athletes I work with that don't know how to breathe properly. Mm. All right. So we're gonna juice this up even more. So you've got the primary, secondary, you got your turbo buttons. When we hit our turbo buttons this time, we're going to raise our chin and look up to the ceiling, almost like you're leaning back to do a bit of the, you know, you got limbo in the States, doing how low can you go?
Yes, yes.
So we're going to raise our chin and sort of lean back a little bit as we hit our turbo buttons.
Okay.
Cool?
Feel.
So let's blow it out. Blow it out. Out, 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 out. Start breathing in. And then hit the turbo buttons, raise your chin, open, 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 hold it, wriggle, 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 wriggle your shoulders, wriggle, 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 feel that chest opening up, and if it feels good, let it out with a sigh. Okay, because this isn't just your secondary inhale. This is your breath of possibility. Okay, when things feel impossible, when I've got crap in my head, look what it does to my structure. It hunches me over. Yeah. And when I'm hunched over, I am pinching off my lung capacity. I'm also pinching off my nervous system. We're an electrical circuit. Now, nerves are like these hose pipes, okay? And if you pinch off your garden hose, there's less water going through. So it is with our nerves and the energy they carry. So when we're hunched over, we're literally pinching off the energy that our body naturally has. We're naturally energetic, but we block it by shallow breathing and poor posture. So when we hit those turbo buttons and breathe, we're not just getting a juice up of oxygen, we're allowing spaces for those incredible energetic systems to flow.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I love that. What I really, really appreciated was, you know, first there's the smile. I don't know if most people do this, but first there's the smile. And then with the next breath, I mean, at least a little laughter. And then with the third one, even more laughter.
We actually haven't even got to the juicy bit yet.
What?
Yeah, it's going to get better. Trust me. Again, this is the fun we have with breath. So we're all born with it, but we don't access it because primarily no one's making money from it. Yeah. If you access the power of your breath, you become sovereign. Most of the stuff in our consumer society becomes instantly redundant. When you give to yourself what we're born to give ourselves, because if we don't give ourselves the power, we look for power outside of ourselves.
Right.
See how that works? So this is what I love about breath work. You get your power back. So imagine before you even leave the house, you know, often we chase things, right, that we sense that if we attain those things, it'll give us a certain state of being.
Yeah.
Breath work allows us to access those states of being before we even get there. So we can still chase those things, but imagine before you even leave the house, you give yourself that nourishment, that completeness, you know? I feel really satisfied. I feel really powerful. So now when I'm going through my day, I'm not chasing something. I'm a complete unit.
I love that. I love that. Now
we're going to juice this up even more because I know we've got a few minutes left. Okay. Your nose, right? See how I'm sort of wrinkling up my nose?
Yeah.
We've got sinuses that sit behind that. So we're going to double the speed of our inhale and really snort, okay, air over our sinuses, because that oxygenates your brain straight away.
Okay.
Cool, cool?
Yeah.
So you ready for this?
Yeah, I think, yes.
So blowing it all the way out, 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 further out the better, further out the better. With your mouth closed, breathe in and really snort the air as you open up, hit the turbo buttons, raise your chin, raise your chest, snort, 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 head back, hold it, wriggle it, wriggle it, wriggle it. And if it feels good, let it out with a sigh.
Wow. Wow. That kind of makes you a little high. Feels
getting
good.
High on your own supply.
Feels good.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know we've got a minute left. I'm going to leave a little link in the description for this is the breath of possibility. It actually moves into the breath of peace, but I'll leave a little link. People can have a little look through that. But this little activity becomes a circuit breaker. So when I'm kicking around in the real world, I'm human, things annoy me. And so if I'm, say, standing in a queue and I'm annoyed, I will discreetly, okay, change my state. So this becomes my medication pump. When I was on pharmaceuticals, when I said I couldn't sleep, lost 6 years of my life to pills. I used to take pills, you know, had it next to my bed, in my car, in my fruit bowl, because I was always trying to self-regulate. These little circuit breakers are going to be the thing that changes your state, and you can access it whenever you want. And there's little hacks like this you can use. I mean, the idea of this is to make a lifestyle out of it. If you want to make a lifestyle out of it, I've got a very easy online resource. I'm all about helping people using their breath to sleep better. So if you get your phone out, put in three words, breath work, in bed. I'm sure the links will be below. It'll ask you when you want to sleep, when you want to wake up. We take care of the rest. And it's that lifestyle of, you know, just before you sleep, there's your little notification, hit that, press play. 5 or 10 minutes of breath work, you turn your bed into an absolute cloud. You have the best night's sleep ever. And then getting out of bed when you wake up and you've got all that stuck energy feeling like lead, 5 or 10 minutes before your feet hit the ground of breath work, if you can win the first 10 minutes of the day, you've won the day. We're currently giving away 28 days free, so it won't cost you anything, but we want to gift you a month of free sleep. If I could give someone $1,000 or 1,000 nights of good sleep, I'd give them 1,000 nights of good sleep. Like, I'm punching past 50 now, and I'm keeping up with the 20-year-olds at the gym, and I have no plans on slowing down.
Amazing. So between the breath work and delightful dip in the ice basin, good start to the day.
Yep. You can give that to yourself. You don't have to pay anyone for it. Now, I always like to start a light a candle when I'm doing these things, because whenever I'm doing a podcast and I'm aware that, well, with what we're doing right now, it's going to potentially outlive us, right? So I always prepare myself for at least 2 hours beforehand. So, you know, sunrise breath work, you know, physical activity, blah, blah, blah. I just got to have my ice bath. And so getting in a state where we can just be in this moment, nothing blocking me. So you can just let it come out without the clutch, you know?
I love that you do an ice bath in the morning. I am not that brave. Just want to put that out there. I know it would probably invigorate me and make me feel amazing, but I've always been like a afternoon kind of ice bath girl, just to put it out there.
Well, look, you don't need to get into an ice bath. The first thing I do in the morning is just I've got a bowl on top in my ice bath. So I take out that bowl and I just put my face in it. And you can get 70% of the ice bath benefits just by tripping the mammalian dive reflex. Yeah, 70%. Because this is where the power is. This cascade of chemical reactions that is like the human superpower that no one knows about.